Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have some very interesting people I love to introduce you to. And although I'm so excited about introducing you to them, you know, I got to take a moment. I got to stop a moment and ask you to do what I always ask you to do every day, Monday through Friday, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone who needs this information, someone who wants to grow their business, an entrepreneur. Maybe there's someone who wants to improve their life, and they won't have this information that our guests are bringing to you unless you go ahead and share it with them. So share the show, invite your friends, send that tweet, send that text, because what? The Roundtable Talk Show is live. So while you're going to go ahead and introduce the show to your friends, I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to our very first guest, Mr. Richard Harmer. Richard is a recognized leader in corporate communications and media strategies, with nearly 20 years of experience working with corporations, celebrities, professional sports teams, and nonprofits. He has seen the good, the bad, and everything in between. Richard has provided advice, counsel, and developed and implemented strategic communication programs for dozens of companies, including high-profile athletes, celebrities, and politicians. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today?
I'm excited. Thank you for joining us. Are you in?
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Is that a studio? It looks all professional, like you're about to shoot a show.
It's actually an office from my, yes, I have a whole separate office from my house. So yeah, that's where I'm at. Yeah.
I love it. It's beautiful. It's professional.
Oh, thank you.
Richard, what are you passionate about?
People. To be honest with you, people. I think, you know, if you have a passion for people and you have the ability to care, you get pretty far in life. And it's kind of the same thing I tell my 12-year-old, think for yourself and care, be a good person. And, you know, that's really the two things I'm most passionate about, to be honest with you, besides my family and my dog.
Oh, even got the little dog. That's how you know a family's happy. Family doesn't have a dog, there's an issue.
I agree 100%.
Okay. So I know I read your bio, I read it out, but tell us who you are and what you do.
So I'm a certified crisis communication consultant. I have worked, I work a lot with Mark Cuban. So I led the crisis in 2018 for the Dallas Mavericks and Mark. So primarily my 60% of my business, or probably a little bit more, is focused on crisis in corporate communication and culture initiatives. So one of the things that most people don't realize is a crisis in a company is, or an organization of any size, is usually an indicator of culture issues, right? So we may go in with the communication crisis side, but what we end up actually dealing with is the culture side. So my focus is primarily, you know, really geared towards that, to be honest with you. And so I work with organizations of all sizes, individual athletes, even right now. I actually have a former Major League Baseball player. He was the MVP of a World Series, and he's dealing with some stuff. So whether it's an individual or whether it's a company or corporation like that, that's kind of what I do. A sports team is really no different than any other organization, except they're in a fishbowl. So everything that they do gets magnified, right? So, you know, everything that we deal with Mark, it's just what we're dealing with times 20, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of like five people wanting to get to him, it's 500 people wanting to get to him. And so it's really about taming that. But at the end of the day, what I do is scalable. It can be for any size organization or any person, quite frankly.
Okay, so we're going to drill down into that, Richard, because one of the conversations that I often talk about, because I focus on business owners and entrepreneurs, is really understanding the culture. Because, you know, companies, they have their employee handbook, and it tells you what they
believe. It's bullshit. Bullshit.
You took the words right. Go, Richard.
Hey, well, here's the thing with that. Culture will outweigh policies and procedures all day. If the last four people that went into HR to deal with an issue, and then they're not there anymore, guess what? You don't have an open door policy. You say you have an open door policy, but you don't have an open door policy. It's complete bullshit. Your culture will outweigh your policies and procedures every single time. I guarantee you. I've been in enough organizations and it doesn't matter. It starts from the top down. That's where your culture starts. It's just an indicator of your brand. That's all it is. So throw your policies and procedures out the door and pay attention to your culture.
Well, can we at least keep the policies and procedures? We got to throw them. Okay.
If you ask the attorneys, they'll say yes. Yes, but it must align with your, it must align with your culture, right? Like one of the things that bugs me the most really is, you know, you clock in every day, but you promote flexibility.
Right.
Well, that doesn't really jive, right? Because most people, if you actually have a flexible organization, you don't need to clock in every day. You don't need your employees to clock in every day. Be flexible. Have them come in at 8:30, 9, 7:30, 10, whatever works for them. That's flexible. Right.
We're going to talk about that, Richard, because I'm telling you, in one of my experiences, I have all these stories about my life. I worked for all these different companies, was laid off 8 times. But one of my favorite stories, because companies don't want to be flexible. I was working for this company and my shift was 9 to 5. It was literally 9 to 5. But me, you know, being me and who I am, I roll in about 9:20. You know, yeah, and I'm management. And so my manager had a problem with this. So one day she sent me down. She said, Sharifa, this is what we have to do. We're going to put you on a time clock. So you have to punch in and punch out. I told her, okay. I said, but you do understand that when I leave here at 7 p.m. or 8 p.m., right? That's on the clock too. I never saw that time clock. So, you know, companies, they don't want to be flexible. So I'm going to talk some more with you, Richard, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Carrie Munson. Carrie is the founder of the brand Under Summers. Founded 9 years ago, she created her patented shortlet, anti-thigh chafing slip short to help women love their thighs without wearing shapewear. She started Under Summers while working as a speech language pathologist for her local school district. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Hi, thank you for having me.
You are so welcome. Okay, I need to hear this because this is all in my area about trying to fit things and wear things that actually, you know, fit.
I get it. I'm a transplant. I'm from Minnesota and I moved to Houston about.
Ooh, how you doing? Are you okay?
I'm okay now. It took me about 7 years to acclimate. But, you know, I was working in the schools as a speech pathologist. You are on the floors, you're out on the playground, you're also in meetings with, you know, the administration and parents. And I needed something that was cool and comfortable and professional to wear to work. And so my story started there. I thought dresses, that's the perfect solution, except for I'm a woman with thighs and my thighs rub together. So if I see some heads nodding already, you know what this problem is, if you've got it, and it's nothing to be ashamed about. It is what it is. Our thighs are made.
It's like an infomercial. It's like, there's nothing to be ashamed of. You can admit that you have rubby thigh. I'm sorry.
Yes, you know.
That's awesome.
The whole thigh gap thing. That's not me.
You having flashbacks? You okay, Carrie?
So at the time, you know, this is almost 10 years ago, there was nothing on the market that was marketed for thigh chafing prevention. Shapewear was on the market. I'm not a shapewear girl. I have a chronic pain disorder called fibromyalgia, and I don't need any more discomfort in my life. I just wanted to wear something comfortable. And the other thing about things that we wear on our legs, shorts, is they ride up.
And there's yes, nothing, girl, preach!
There is nothing less attractive than a woman pulling down her shorts. Yes. So all I wanted was something simple, right? Something that was comfortable, something that didn't ride up my legs when I walked, something that stopped my thigh chafing problem. And I also wanted it to be a single layer solution. I didn't want to have to wear underwear and a short under my dress because it's hot here. So I got on Google. I'm a wonderful Googler. I can find answers to any problem on there, like many of us. And I taught myself how to sew, make patterns. Next thing you know, I have this beautiful functional design that doesn't ride up when I walk. I got rid of the seams between the legs. So they will never rip and tear. I will never have a thigh chafing problem when wearing my shortlets. The fabric that I use is so silky soft and comfortable that you actually can wear it to bed and it feels like you're wearing nothing. So, so that's where my product idea came from. And, you know, I wasn't the only one who needed the product. So next thing I know, I'm sewing in my garage. I've got other women helping me sew in my garage. And 10 years later, I'm a, you know, internationally known brand of thigh chafing solutions. And we continue to do fun
amazing
and things. What did you say?
That's amazing. That's great. I love that.
So we continue to do fun and different things. I want women to not be embarrassed by their, you know, their shortlets. So we do fun colors and patterns and prints. And I say, if it accidentally shows, make it beautiful, right? Let it be seen. It's okay. So that's kind of our philosophy. And I think I might be taking too much time, but I want to quickly.
No, this is my, I got this. This is what I do this every day. Don't worry. I'm just blown away because you have the, like, I look at people's energy and their vibe. And to me, you have that Erin Brockovich kind of, I'm a save the world. You like are a disruptor. Like you created an industry that didn't even exist. And you're sitting there so calmly, women who suffer from thigh chafing. And I'm like, I didn't even know that was a thing, but I suffer from it though. I'm self-diagnosing myself with it as we speak. So Carrie, I am going to come back to you. I have obviously so many more questions for you, but I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest, the lovely Miss Lakeisha Womack. Lakeisha is the owner and lead consultant with Womack Consulting Group. For the past 15 years, the firm has provided brand management, leadership training, strategic planning, and political consulting to professionals, not-for-profit organizations, churches, colleges, universities, and businesses across the globe through retreats, seminars, and one-on-one consultations. Good morning, Lakeisha. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I am doing wonderful, and I'm so excited to be here with these guests. And I have questions for Carrie and Richard when we finish these introductions.
Well, like, I've never had anybody kind of reserve their questions. Like, you put in your notes. Lakeisha, let me introduce, y'all just taking over the show this morning. Let me do my job. But I was stumbling over the introduction, which I apologize for, but I do that when I get distracted because I start to notice in shows the synchronicities. And I went back to Richard's bio and he's like, I work with politicians. And Lakeisha's like, I work with politicians. I'm like, well, look, I'm running for Senate in 2024. I might get some questions.
I got you.
Thank you.
Got you.
Thank you. I'm going to ask some questions that's going to help me out. But anyway, we're not talking about me for this moment. Let's talk about you, Lakeisha. Who are you? What do you do?
Oh, who am I? So you read the bio and that's what I do professionally. My passion is around a project that I launched last year called Rethinking Church. And it started out as a series of workshops that I was doing to help churches grow because I thought that the reason a lot of churches were not growing is because they weren't doing a good job with messaging, that they needed help with branding and marketing. And I started going into churches and realizing that, yeah, a lot of church members like aren't disciples. Like they're just members of a nonprofit doing fundraising. And that's why people aren't attracted to them because they actually go to church looking for Jesus and they find fish plates and Zumba and everything but Christ. So Rethinking Church is a project that we launched to help churches.
Okay, I hate to cut you off, but that's what I tend to do. So before you go on, you said all of that with a straight face. Like you just broke down the whole church and then just moved on. Like it was just like you're fearless. You don't, you're not afraid to say what you have to say.
But it's the truth. And I think that, like, and I'm sure like Richard can attest to this, like, one of the reasons people stay in crisis mode is because they don't want to acknowledge the truth, because right. you continue to hide behind the lie, you continue to perpetuate the lie, and it just grows and grows and grows. Yes. But the truth is painful in the beginning, but once you rip that band-aid off, then you can start the healing and people appreciate it more. They appreciate yep. when you're honest and say, hey, we've been doing this wrong. Let's take some time to get it right. People will come back to you. They'll give you a second chance. They'll retry your brand. But when you continue to hide behind the lie and say, oh no, there's no problem here, nothing is wrong, then people are looking like, but we see the scar. We see the bullet hole. We see you bleeding and you don't want to treat yourself. So why would I support your brand? Why would I support your church? Why would I support your business? Mm-hmm. And so by getting churches to own up to, hey, we're not doing a good job. Let's rethink how we do ministry. Let's rethink how we engage with the community and our congregations. Then the people are like, wow, you know, this church is really trying to do something different. So we're going to give them a second chance.
Okay. So I was,
I wrong. Love that.
I interrupted. So let's go to now what you offer, what you do.
Right. So with Rethinking Church, like last year, we held our first virtual summit. We had 4 days, 60 speakers just coming on a virtual platform to talk about different strategies to rethink church. Since then, we've done a series of one day like symposiums, and we have our summer summit coming up this year in July. And we're going to have 3 days with about 75 speakers. And our theme is ministry that impacts. So we're looking for speakers who can teach a masterclass, 1 hour. How can you create a ministry that impacts around the 6 topics that we're focusing on, and really helping people to come to the event and leave with strategies that they can immediately implement? I'm one of those people, like, I don't want you to just talk about it. If you're not actually doing the work, then I don't want you to be a speaker. Like, I want you to come if you can show us that you've been doing this, and then how can we take your model and replicate it in our ministry? So that's who we're looking for right now.
Okay. Well, right now, I have a reverend and a pastor I'm going to introduce you to, and I'm going to make that introduction, and then after that, whatever happens, happens. Okay, don't blame me.
I got you.
Y'all changed the world, though. Y'all still have to pay me.
Okay. We got you.
Lakeisha, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, the wonderful Miss Gaynor Painter. Gaynor is a very experienced transcriber based in South Africa. She's established Typewrite Transcription and Typing Service in 2005. She is the co-founder of Essays First Virtual Assistant Forum, Tavisa. Good morning, Gaynor. How are you?
Hi, Sharifa. Well, thanks. Lovely to be here, and thanks for having me.
You are in South Africa right now?
Correct, I am, yes. Johannesburg, South Africa.
Oh, wow. I love it when people call in from all over the world. But before I get into all the details, tell us what you do. What are you passionate about, Gaynor?
I started my transcription business in 2005 already. I do transcribing, typing, proofreading, editing. And then along the way, myself and a colleague started up this Tavasa, which is our support forum for other transcribers, other VAs who basically trying to do the same as us, but we found there wasn't a lot of support, and we thought that that was something we could give back and provide support for. So we do that. Gained a lot of business experience and a lot of fun and connections along the way. So, and it's been also been interesting to see how the internet develops, from 2005, changed a little bit until now. And it's just awesome because it gives us the opportunity to do this, to connect with the whole world, you know. And I work for customers in South Africa, America, Australia, England. The world is your oyster, really. So that's where we are. Here we are.
Okay, so I love that. 2 questions then, since you mentioned since 2005. Number one, first question, what stands out to you the most as far as the changes you've seen? And second question, if you could have done anything different as far as the internet, is there anything you would have done different?
I'll go with the second one first. Not really. Honestly, I had my idea of being a virtual, we'll call it a virtual assistant, before the internet even caught up with what we, you know, with what my idea was. So sort of 2005, ADSL came along, which allowed, you know, before that, I don't know if you remember, but we still had dial-up, you know, with the modems and all that, and that, whilst it could be done, it was a little bit difficult, but now we've got ADSL, and then obviously along came fiber and everything else, which just makes it all so much easier.
No, I remember dial-up. I do. I remember what you would do is you would put the food on. You would start the food, and then you go start the dial-up, and then you go in the kitchen and cook the food, and then come back an hour later, and then you were connected through AOL.
Yeah, so my first month or two in this business, I was doing that, and you can imagine the phone bill was pretty high, but we knew ADSL was coming, so luckily, you know, throughout the world, the uptake or the buy into the virtual working arena has grown in leaps and bounds. I mean, everyone's doing it now, you know, and especially since coronavirus. I mean, everyone's tapped into this virtual way of working. But we had quite a lot of work to do, especially here in South Africa, to let people know that this was an industry that existed and we could provide business services and that kind of thing. Now it's obviously quite an entirely different world, but here we are and quite proud to have survived this long, and we're still growing. So the future's quite exciting.
That's wonderful. I definitely agree. I built my first website in 1994, launched my first radio show in 2009. So I've seen a lot of changes along this way. The one thing I would have done different is back in the days, I would have bought all the one word domains. I would have just took my 1 month salary and just all the domains I could buy.
Yeah. Yes, I agree with that. And what I possibly would have done differently is, I started off with one of those free websites with the free free domain hosting things. And honestly, I would do that differently now. I wouldn't start with that because, you know, you need to own your own domains to own your content, basically. So that's one of the things. Can't really think of much else that I would have done differently, but there probably is if I you know, dig into it, but it's all gone step by step.
No, I like that answer. That's good. I tell people that all the time. Own your own domain. Too many people want to just operate a business from Instagram, and that is not what to do. Instagram works, love it, talk to a lot of people, meet a lot of people through Instagram, follow people, but I have AskSharifa.com. Now I want to go over to Richard. Now, Lakeisha says that you will attest to what she had to say about crisis and conflict. What were your thoughts on what Lakeisha had to say?
100%. So I have a quick story here. So, you know, I was just dealing with a church a while back, a pretty large ministry with 12,000 plus. Mm-hmm. We were dealing with everything from guns to suicide to threatening up shooting a family to removing the senior pastor to removing four members on the board and news. So, I mean, there was so much involved. Alcoholism with the senior pastor, there was so much involved in this. But she said one of the things that I love, which is so true, which is denial. You know, when you talk about a church or really any organization, a lot of times what's happening is a cover-up, right? So it's not a cover-up like you would think, like an intentional cover-up. It's more of a cover-up in regards to people are just in denial that it's even happening, right? So whenever someone like me comes in there into the organization, the first thing we do is actually what Lakeisha just said is expose the wound. You have to expose the wound. And in a crisis, the first thing you have to do is acknowledge the problem. And it's a big deal, because if you don't acknowledge it, not just through yourself, but throughout the entire organization that something's happening, people will continue to be in denial about it. So unless you can assess it, you have to be able to, see it first, right? You have to be able to acknowledge the issue. Once we get to that point, we can start addressing it. When you have a real crisis like this, you know, there's a couple ways that you have to deal with it. And one of them is putting out the actual fire, if there's a kitchen in the fire, now is not the time to figure out how the fire started, right?
Yes.
You have to put out the fire, right? So while we're dealing with that, we're trying to figure out, okay, how deep does this fire go, right? Mm-hmm. So now we can start getting to the to how the wound happened and all that other stuff too. But you have to deal with the fire, put out the fire. So Lakeisha, what you were saying is right on point. There has to be a single thread throughout every single organization. And, you know, usually that thread can come down to one word. My thread for my organization, what I say, is clarity. So we create clarity in communications, right? That's what we do. So there's another company, there's this people. They're all about people, right? So you have to be able to weave that into the process for dealing with the crisis. And if you can do that, you can not only come out ahead like they did, like my church client, but you can actually thrive and use it as a springboard to move forward, right? And another thing that most people don't think about is a crisis actually has a benefit. You know, let's take this example, right? We were dealing with alcoholism, right? When the church was founded by the guy's father 40 years ago, right? He founded the church based on, you know, some basic principles, right? But just like in any organization, it doesn't matter if it's a church or a truck driving school, it doesn't really matter what it is, right? You can actually take a crisis and springboard forward, but you have to do one thing. You now have to accept that with this organization, now, guess what? You become an advocate for addiction. You didn't ask for that. You didn't ask to be an advocate for addiction, but guess who's an advocate for addiction, right? So what Mark Cuban did and what we did with the Dallas Mavericks was very much the same thing, right? We took an inequality for women, for African-American, for anybody, for equality. And guess what Mark Cuban is out there doing now? He has become a leader and a force for those principles, those things that he now stands on. He didn't ask for that when he bought a basketball team X amount of years ago, right? But guess what? He has fully embraced equality. And that's what you have to do as an organization after a crisis. If you can do that and you don't just talk about it, you put your money where your mouth is. And an apology is expensive. It's very expensive. But if you do it the right way, you can not only get a return, you can actually thrive directly because of it.
Yes.
And it works, and I've seen it.
I'm agreeing. I want to go over to Carrie, because it seems like that's exactly what you did. You took the Richard Harmer guide plan of this is what, and you went out and you started this because of a specific action.
I did. And it's so interesting that you're talking about addiction and recovery, because that's part of my journey. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and what Under Summers has allowed me to do, aside from provide great products for women and solve their thigh chafing, you know, issues. My husband, who's a retired Marine, we started a nonprofit for veterans called Fabraiser. And we do peer supported groups and one-on-one sessions to help with addiction, recovery, PTSD. Mm-hmm. Those are all things that my husband lives and breathes, and I do too. It's our world. Mm-hmm. So my thread in my business is service. Part of the recovery model is being of service to another person, another organization. So I served as a speech pathologist. It's in me. I was a teacher. I'm a child of two teachers. So it started there. And then my company, one of our biggest things that we say, so where I find our values are, they come right from my mouth. What do I always say, right? And so we have to be of service to our customers. We might be sitting behind a computer screen and a keyboard, but we are of service to them. Our products provide a service, all of our words and our customer service. And then now I have this wonderful nonprofit that I'm running that is of service to all of these men and women who need support. And ongoing support. Ours is a lifelong battle. You don't recover you're recovering always from addiction and alcoholism and PTSD. So we're of service. And so that's
I love that. That's incredible. That is absolutely incredible. You know, I'm writing a book right now called Don't Assume There's Toilet Paper. We can get to that later or whatever. But the whole thing is we assume that we go into starting a business for one purpose, right? But what we don't realize is that purpose becomes our purpose. That purpose becomes a reason for us to move forward. I deal with social anxiety on a regular basis. I'm in communication. I'm in media. I act as a spokesperson. It seems completely counterintuitive to what I do. But you know what, though? Just like you, I'm not afraid to talk about it. And I'm also not afraid to make it a part of me. When I talk about clarity, I talk about that you have to be transparent in everything that you do, right? That's clarity. That's true clarity. And you can actually probably relate to many people out there that are dealing with both chafing and addiction. Mm-hmm. You have a voice. You have a voice. And the fact that you're using one word as that one word service that you can weave and thread throughout the entire organization of everything that you do, that's remarkable. I love that. It's complete.
Wonderful. I do too. If you are just now tuning into the show, we are having a great conversation today. Go ahead and join us and please go ahead and share the show. Now, I did want to say before going on, because I did tell Lakeisha I was going to allow her to go ahead and ask her questions, but I would say my word is talk. Like, because I always share the fact that I used to be a little bit envious of people who always knew what they wanted to do. Like those people who, like, I know I'm going to be a teacher. You know, like you said, your parents were both teachers. There's something in you, or a doctor, whatever it is. I don't care, a pediatrician. I never really felt that vibe, but I've been talking like nonstop since, you know, forever. And my mom was like, if you say one more word, I was like, but my mom, why mom? Why that man got that jacket on? Why that lady laughing? Why? And that was just me. And now I'm a talk show host. My whole thing is let's talk about it. I believe that change starts with the conversation. So I definitely agree. So I'm going to ask you, Lakeisha, before you ask your questions, what would you say is your word?
Oh, what is my word? I think my word is action. Like, I'm not one of those people who, I don't talk a lot. So
don't talk about it, be about it.
Right, so I'm one of those people, like, you know, if I walk into a room, people are like, oh, she's antisocialist, she's quiet. But usually, like, I'm sizing up, like, all right, what needs to be done? What's missing? What needs to happen? And I'm the person that when I do say something, it's like, all right, this is what we need to do. And people are like, whoa, where'd that come from? And it's because, like, I've been kind of watching the dynamic. So my word is definitely action. And as a consultant, that's what I help my clients to do. I'm their accountability partner to take action, because I have so many people that come to me with so many great ideas. And it never fails that, like, a year later, they're in the same position because they didn't take action. And it's not that people don't have great ideas. It's not that, you know, there's not money out there, but it's just that most people don't have the fortitude to take action. And so that's what I wanted to ask Carrie, like, how did you go from, like, sewing in your garage to scaling? Because that's something that a lot of people struggle with. Like, they have the great idea, they're doing it on a small scale, but how do you get to becoming, like, an international brand?
It's like a lot of action. One of my favorite quotes is a goal without a plan is just a dream.
Right.
And I like to put an action in there, a goal without an action plan, a strategic action plan. You know, I think that I was patient. It doesn't happen overnight for most of us. You know, we hear the stories where it, you know, you just become a huge brand. But for most of us, that's not how it works. So I would say that it was daily work, every day, you know, one foot in front of the other. And just, it's a journey, right? You start out with just the procedures of how to get these products made, right? I mean, yeah. I started at the very basics. It was just procedural. How do I do it? How do I get this thing working? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, slowly, step by step, action by action, every single day, you know, it became about developing my product, you know, persona and in my customer base, and and thinking about those kind of things. And then it became about testing the waters in different places and different mediums, you know, presenting my products in different places. And then, you cycle back through all of these things, you know, your people, places, things, and what you're making. And it's just a process. It's a process of going through the motions of.
She said something that I just want to point out there. She said journey, right? So most of the time, but one of the biggest mistakes, people get focused on the destination, right? Mm-hmm. But you have to immerse yourself in the journey. The destination is no more important than the journey, because 9 times out of 10, the destination will not be there. The destination is going to move. And going back to Lakeisha's point, action, I love that. You know that little saying we all say, yeah, I'm just going through the motions.
Yes.
Motions does not, there's no result out of emotion, mm-hmm. right? You don't get a result. You're just going through mm-hmm. the motions. So for you, Lakeisha, to say action, and for you to do it, Carrie, it's remarkable, because it's two successful people that are taking action, that are doing something about mm-hmm. it. And they're not so focused on the destination. You're focused on the journey. The yes. destination is no more important than the journey. And it's something that we forget about daily. We forget about it. You know, people want to do all these aspiring things, but they don't immerse themselves in the process. So,
yes, I definitely agree. And I like what Lakeisha said as well, when you made the clarification about coaches. That's what I tell people. I am not a coach. I'm a consultant.
Yes.
I give you some passion. Things to do, you go do them. I don't want to sit with you every week and talk about what you're doing mm-hmm. and how you feel about what you're doing. I don't know. Like, these are the things, the steps that you need to take. And I know you had a question for Richard, Lakeisha, but I wanted to find out Gaynor's word before we lost track of time.
Sure. Yeah, great. Thanks for asking. My word is tweak. Now, I've actually got another project that I do, a blog. Well, it's a blog, and I call it Tweak the Golden Thread, because what I like is sort of people who will go through life and just want to impact on people, who want to, you know, impact across generations, across, you know, countries, and actually mean something to other people. So I think with our group, our support forum for people that we help try and, you know, upskill themselves and empower themselves, it's just a little tweak, you know. You know, for clients as well, it's the same as if you provide a good service, you're sort of tweaking, and they remember you, they come back to you. And interestingly, I've worked for politicians, for ministers, as well as actually people. I do a lot of student work, and a lot of them do interviews, and quite a number of them have done interviews for mental health issues, you know, so I relate to very well to what everyone's been saying. And yeah, that's the word that I, you know, I don't necessarily come in there like a big burning flame, but I hope that people will remember the input that I've had with them.
I like that. It goes back to what Carrie was saying about how some people believe that it's an overnight success, and it's not. You tweak it along the way till you kind of find your sea legs and you find what works for you. So I definitely like that. Now, Lakeisha, you said you had a question for Richard.
I do, but I want to say before that, people also have to get over the fear of perfection, of this obsession with perfection. So many people don't start projects because they want it to be perfect. And I always say, like, you're never going to reach perfection. Like, there are people, like, I've seen people in their closets doing lives, like selling $50,000 worth of coaching programs. Like, people don't care about your background. They don't care about you being all fancy. If you can solve a problem, if you're providing a service, and I think that's what Carrie hit on, like, she was providing a service, she was answering a need. And so often people are like, oh, I gotta have everything perfect, and I gotta have everything like just right, and it's never gonna be just right. Because as Gaynor said, like, once you go to market, you have to tweak, because what's in your head and what you think your customers want is probably not even on track. Like, you might have the idea, but you have to be willing to listen to them so that you can tweak it to get to that perfection that you're looking for. But for Richard, so my question.
Wait, before you ask, I just want to say, before we ask Richard this question, I was over here screaming and like, yes, girl, I can relate. No, because I tell people this story. My mother's name, Patricia. right? And my mother has 8 brothers and sisters. And so she grew up with the nickname Perfect Patty because everything had to be perfect. And then I tell people, okay, but just imagine being Perfect Patty's daughter. Mm. Okay. Like nothing was ever, so, you know, so I had to get to the point. I'll be 45 this month where I'm just okay with me. Like I just had to relax and let go of this idea of perfection, which was in my head and in my spirit for so long. So I definitely agree. So I didn't mean to interrupt, but I do. That's who I am. But so ask your question, Lisa.
She talks. She talks.
I talk. So I tried to warn you.
We love it. We love it. So for Richard, like, I want to know, because I work with people who sometimes find themselves in crisis and the hardest thing is to get them to own it. So what do you do to get people to own it? Because like there's so much resistance and there, like people, like this cover up mentality is so ingrained in people. Like, how do you kind of walk them through or massage them to just be like, yo, like you got it. Gotta own it. And if people look like our former president, one of the things that made him so successful was he owned his crap. Like no matter what it was, like he never apologized for it. He was never like, you know, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. He was like, yo, this is who I am. And people love that. They love it when you own your crap, no matter how smelly, stinky, nasty it is. If you own your crap, like people love that. So how do you get people to own their crap?
So there's actually two ways of looking at it. If you're in a crisis, the word empathy is always a go-to, right? So you have to get them to see it from the other side. So when we address like all the stakeholders, we actually start with the victim or who it was directly affected, to where if you go to the legal department or whomever, they're going to start with the organization. How is our organization affected by this? Well, if you're doing that, and if you're looking at it from that perspective, the only thing that you're going to do is try to protect the organization. Right. When you're not empathizing with the victim or who was actually affected by it first, right? Yeah. So, and it doesn't really matter what it is. So just by that word empathy, most people, unless they're, you know, completely off the rocker, will actually come in and own that for that purpose, for that to so the victim can be apologized to, so we can start the right, you know, because at the end of the day, most things that we come across or most crises, it's not life or death.
Right.
Right. Like, see, we tend to think like it's life or death, when in the reality is you got your own world. Carrie's got her own world. Lakeisha's got her own world. Gaynor's got her own world. So you're immersed in your own world every single day. In other words, we're not caring about your shit 90% of the time like you think we are. We're just not. And so everyone thinks that we're just, all they're thinking about is me. All they're thinking about, it's like, no. They have a life. They had 2 kids. You know, they're dealing with all this other stuff, right? So we have to get our mindset thinking about first empathizing with whoever's been affected, right? And we have to get the person that had the crisis to see it that way. And when you can convince them that their stuff is not as important as they think, man, that's a game changer. I was talking to a senior pastor on that same story that I was telling you earlier, right? It was the founding pastor of this organization. I told him, I said, you, Mike, are not as important as you think you are.
Right.
And you know what he said? Well, what is that supposed to mean? 60% of everyone that's in the congregation today has no idea who he is, because he hasn't been a presence in the organization for more than 4 years, right? So that time has sort of passed him. But here's what I also tell him. I say, what you built can outlast you. That is more important than having your name still attached to the organization today.
Yeah.
Right. So are you, what are you doing this for? Are you doing this for yourself or for the kingdom? Because if you're going to do this for yourself, there's a finite, you're going to die one day, right? We're all going to die one day. That's finite. But if you're doing this to have an everlasting impression on the world and the kingdom as a whole, you're going to let this thing go. You know what he did? Resigned from the board.
Oh, wow.
With his wife.
Well,
once he realized that he was not as important to the organization as he once was, and that what he built can go beyond him, that matters. That's a legacy, right?
Okay, so Richard, this is what we done, right? We just booked you as a speaker at Lakeisha's event, okay? So
yeah, we actually did that, like in the chat.
Okay, good. I got to have private conversations without me.
I'm gonna pay you a referral fee.
That's all that matters. Wait a minute. No,
mailbox money.
Yes, but that's good. That's great. I love the way. What were your thoughts on what Richard just had to say, Lakeisha?
Yeah, I think that's very helpful, because one of the things I tell people is like, you overestimate your self-importance, because so often we think that we're so much more important to other people than we actually are, because most people are operating in their own self-interest. They're trying to get through their day, manage their family, manage their job. And so they're really not caring as much about your craft. And so when you're trying to cover it up, it brings more attention to it, versus when you just say, you know what, this is who I am, this is where I am, either I'm going to fix it or I'm going to stay in it. People appreciate that more. So just like the way Richard was able to frame that will definitely help me when I'm having some of those conversations.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And Carrie, and going to back to Carrie here, for you to own and say, like, look, Richard, it's funny that you bring that up. You know, I have dealt with addiction. You know, like, that's owning something, right? But that's also providing a service to other people and saying, it's okay to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right? It's okay for me to talk about my anxiety issues. I was in the hospital 6 times in 2 years because of it. Right. Because it's hard for me to go in a restaurant. Target's the worst, by the way, the colors, the red, the lights, the people, it drives me crazy. But my 19-year-old loves it. But at the end of the day, I know where my thresholds are. And I'm also saying, like, hey, I'm okay to talk about it because I'm not the only one dealing with this shit. Other people are dealing with it too.
Yeah. Right. So I want to go back over to Carrie on that same exact point. When you started talking about it and building your business, did people kind of, you know, because sometimes they don't take you serious that you're going to build a whole business out of chafing thighs?
I would say I was married at the time to someone else. And I don't think he totally understood what my product was for. And so I think there was some disconnect in our family about what we were doing, what I was doing. And so people who don't know what thigh chafing is and how bad it is, they don't get it. It just doesn't make sense. But if you have had thigh chafing and you know that burn, that terrible feeling, and you know, you've had the blood rushing out of your skin, and they were like, mind blown. Mm-hmm. Yes, we need this product on the market, right? So there were the, you know, maybe haters, people didn't think I could do it. A common thing I think that entrepreneurs get is, well, what if somebody steals your idea? Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't go forward and you don't do it, then what good is the idea anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's a compliment.
Exactly. Yeah. When I first started, there was 3 teeny tiny little companies on the market that we all started at the rate around the same time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would see things happen that looked very much like mine, and I'm sure they would say the same thing. And whether it was coincidental or not, it felt like a compliment. That's how I would have to take it. And now I have really big companies that are competing with me in the thigh chafing world. And you know, I have to just say, you know what, I had a great idea. It's part of the curve of developing a new product, and I'm still existing. I'm still here because I have a great product, a really great product. And so it is part of the journey. It's part of the process,
right,
of, you know, getting competition, having the haters, having people who are supporting you along the way. And it takes a thick skin, really, to put some of that stuff aside. But you know, that's just part of it. You gotta,
I mean, I understand the thick skin and the haters, but specifically what I was asking with my question, so I just want to be clear, is so often when we have a problem, people minimize it, especially if they're not taking us serious in general, which I think, and I tell people, I'm quite honest, I'm very sexist. You know, especially with women, they don't, sometimes they may not take our problems serious. They'll be like, oh, we'll just put some oil on it. You know, rub some Vaseline and you'll be okay. You know, how did you keep, how were you strong enough to keep voicing like, no, we actually have to create a solution to this problem. Women around the world are suffering from this, or maybe it might not be just women. I don't know.
Well, it isn't just women, and I have a men's line coming out sometime soon. COVID has put a big, a lot of obstacles in my way, but it's coming sometime soon. But I think labeling it, giving it a name, being direct and specific, and just continuing to do it helps to let people talk about it. They get more comfortable with the idea of talking about it. And, but I think labeling it and being upfront about it. So at first I was kind of afraid. I'm not a chatty person. I'm not a talkative person. So I was timid at first. How do I convey what this product is for? And eventually I got bolder and more comfortable saying it's a thigh chafing prevention product. That's
what I like that. I like it.
But labeling it, I think is a big, it helps shut people down if they are minimizing it. I just named it. I mean, a shortly is my made up word for a product to stop thigh chafing. I made up that word so I would have something to call it.
What's the website?
My website is undersummers.com because I made them to wear undersummer dresses.
Wow.
And I think one thing that you talked about with competition, like so often people are afraid of competition, but competition actually validates your product.
It does.
Because if there are more products on the market, then people are like, oh, it really is an issue. I always use the example, you hardly ever see a McDonald's where there isn't a Burger King or a Wendy's in a nearby vicinity. Because market research shows if you give people options, they're more likely to choose one versus if it's or nothing, then they're more likely to choose nothing. So I think that too often business owners are afraid of competition or like, oh, well, someone else is already doing it. Well, you figure out how you can do it differently and who you're going to serve within that market. Like if I want good French fries, I'm going to McDonald's. If I want a good spicy chicken sandwich, then I'm going to Wendy's because I know what they offer that I like on their menu. And that's the thing that we really have to recognize as business owners is that you can have a million people doing the same thing, but they're not going to do it the same way.
Elon Musk said, when somebody asked him, they said, are you worried about someone else like Porsche coming into to the electric car market? You know what Elon Musk said? No. He said, I certainly hope they do. Why would he say that, right? That's direct competition. Because so many people, there is this, people didn't want to look at electric cars like they do today, directly because Porsche and Tesla and all these other companies are entering the market. It just gave him more validity to your to what you're saying, like he said that his product is viable. Yep. Now he's one of the wealthiest people in the world because people are just jumping on board. Absolutely. You know, it gave more exposure to it was needed in the market. So, Carrie, I love that approach. I think it's a perfect approach.
I feel like it pushes you too. When you have very little competition and it's small, you're like treading water, kind of.
Yes, you
have competition. Absolutely. You're like full on sprinting, right?
Right. Absolutely. Now we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we didn't give you much time, so we're going to start with you, Gaynor.
Thank you. I've really just enjoyed listening to everybody, and I do appreciate the time. So what I wanted to just say to people is, you know, sometimes it can really feel like there's a lot of boulders or obstacles in your way, you know, especially maybe now with the pandemic, as Carrie said, it's kind of shutting things down right now. So I just wanted to say, don't let anyone discourage you. You know, believe in yourself. Things can be done. Even my business is growing now. I'm bringing on a partner, you know, and where the world is opening up to different ideas, to different opportunities with virtual, you know, there's no boundaries, even within terms of international boundaries. You can work like for anywhere, so from anywhere to anywhere. So I just wanted to say, you know, just believe in yourself. If anyone wants to have a look at what I do, and I have some resources available for people in my industry, they've just got to the website, www.typewritetranscription.co.za. I have an ebook there that I wrote, how to get started in this kind of industry and everything. And yeah, you can do it. You know, just if you believe enough, you're prepared to put in the work, you can do it. Absolutely. So that's what I want.
Thank you, Gaynor. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, you are very welcome. A couple of minutes left. I'm going to go over to Carrie. What should our viewers take away from your appearance?
Well, in business, small business, nothing gets done without a strategic plan. That has to be done. It is the action that we do. It's the plan. And you start out with your big vision. What do you want? And you might not know it at first, but eventually you come to it. Like I came to mind that it's service. But if you do have thigh chafing problems, please go to my website at undersummers.com and check out our products. And if you are a veteran or know a veteran who's suffering from PTSD or addiction issues, please visit our website at fobraiser.org. And it's Razor with an S. We don't have time for that story today. So fobraiser.org, if you'd like to check out what my husband and I are doing to serve veterans.
Why are y'all trying to take away all my stories? I need to find out about your story and why we can't assume there's toilet paper. Like, what is going on here? What do you have for us?
In a crisis, many times it's just a symptom of a larger culture issue. So, you know, go back and look at your culture again. Go back and establish why you started the organization, right? And because at the time of a crisis, it's the opportunity to look at the organization as a whole, to address culture issues, right? So care about your people, think for yourself, do the right thing, and you will always fall on the right side of the track. So rwharmer.com is my website. I mean, corporate communications, crisis communication, just culture and crisis go hand in hand.
Yes. Thank you, Richard. Lakeisha, what do you have for us?
Well, I'm going to say thank you so much for having me on your show. And thank you for these amazing guests. I actually learned a lot today, which is always a bonus. And for anyone who wants to connect with me, you can visit my website, WOMAC, C as in consulting, G as in group.com to see the services that I offer. I'm also the published author of 16 books. So my bookstore is online. If you want to connect with me on Facebook, check out hashtag Rethinking Church Strategies, where you can see the work that we're doing and that we have planned for July, and also some of our previous conferences that we've hosted, just to provide tools and resources for ministry leaders to rethink church.
I love it. I always tell people the reason and the way I'm able to book 5 shows a day, 5 guests per show, is a lot of returning guests. So I definitely invite all of you to return. But Lakeisha, you threw those 16 books out at the end. I'm like, where did these 16 books come from? I would have loved
to. I know, like, it was on my post-it to say in the beginning, but then like the conversation got so good that I just forgot about it. But yeah, like I love to write. So
I got like 2 minutes now and you tell me. Come back, Lakeisha. We'll talk about your books and more. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. Also, especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. I love you. I appreciate you. I thank you for supporting our guest and supporting the show. But as always, I thank you for sharing. But please support our guests. Their information is in the Facebook post. Their website links are in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media. Reach out to them. And when you do, please let them know. Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe, and a blessed day. Bye now.
Thank you.